Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey Fleck here, your host for this weekend's edition. Chad will be joining us in the back half of this first hour. Just a note for this weekend show, we're going to be focusing on markets for the type of moves that matter to investors, and we're going to be largely avoiding what the Fed had to say and what other central banks had to say this week. We covered a lot of that during our daily editorials throughout the week. And quite frankly, look, it's a whole lot of noise. I realize central banks can dictate market moves, but I think there are some bigger picture aspects that we all need to pay attention to for these markets and kind of take the central banks out of the equation sometimes. To kick off the show, I am chatting with Mike Larson, editor-in-chief at Money Show. Now, Mike, again, major themes. I think this should be more the consideration for investors. We can tie in central banks and their general trend to want to cut rates. But overall, what are some of the major themes that you're covering and that you're going to be focusing on at some upcoming Money Show conferences?
Sure. Well, you know, we've tried to kind of come up with a way to talk about the big picture, what the 2024 story with quotes around it is going to be. And we kind of cooked up the idea of the big money pivot, because there's a lot of different ways this big money pivot is playing out, right? It's in the economy, it's in government policy, it's in business strategy, and so on. I mean, if you look at what's happening this year, I mean, you mentioned the Fed. We're obviously pivoting from a Fed that's tightening to one that's either going to be sitting on its hands for a while or cutting before too long. But, you know, it's more than that. We're pivoting from a stronger dollar environment to a weaker dollar one. We're pivoting from a stock market dominated by the Magnificent Seven names to one featuring broader participation. You know, we're pivoting from an economic backdrop where investors were really, you know, heavily focused and worried about recession risk. You know, Bloomberg infamously had its 100% chance of a recession headline, to one where they're looking to kind of capitalize on a resumption of growth. You're even looking at, you know, in sectors that everybody's kind of identified as being the next boogeyman out there, things like commercial real estate and banking. We're kind of even pivoting to some bottom fishing in there. You know, it's sort of funny. I was just, before we got on the call, I was kind of looking at some different sector ETFs, and you know, everybody talks about tech all the time. You look at the QQQs. Okay, great. You know, year to date, they're up, what, about 7.5% at last check. But it's kind of funny. If you said, you know, what's up more, tech or financials, you'd say tech, but there it is. If you look at the XLF, the, you know, year-to-date return is almost 10%. So it's beating the QQQs by a little bit. And you're seeing things like materials keep right up with technology. I mean, XLB and so on. So, I mean, and industrials are pretty solid as well. So it's an environment where you're not just having, on the stock market side, you're not just having this sort of Mag 7 market like we had a while back. You know, that's the story of a few quarters ago. The story of this year so far is people looking for opportunity elsewhere and finding it, you know, in terms of the stock market. I mean, heck, we're talking about the Nikkei in Japan hitting, you know, a new all-time high for the first time. You know, it finally took out the ridiculous bubble peak that it had in 1989. So, I mean, Japan of all things, they just raised interest rates for the first time in 17 years. Their central bank did. So again, it's just an illustration of how the big story, this big pivot, is really playing out in a lot of areas. And so I think it's a market environment with a lot of opportunity. There's likely to be new leaders, whereas, you know, what used to be laggards become leaders and what used to be leaders become laggards. It's definitely just a big shift, big pivot environment. And that's what I see. That's what we see. And that's what I think is going to continue to be the story for the rest of 2024.
So Mike, as optimistic as that all sounds, I do hear from a number, even of our generalists that I really respect, that the market is due for a pullback. Just look at how quickly it has run, not just at the beginning of this year, but also at the tail end of last year after that October low. Do you still think we could see a general market pullback?
Yeah, I mean, it's all about timing, right? You know, if you're a shorter term, maybe even, you know, a trader with a time frame of a month or two, yeah, I think as we head into the end of the first quarter, beginning of second quarter, you're probably going to see some digestion of gains. I mean, you're already seeing that in parts of the tech sector that, you know, have continued to get good news, whether it's the NVIDIAs of the world and so on, and yet the stocks are mostly just marking time. And I think that's part of the, not just rotation, but also part of the fact that those old leaders just need to stop and catch their breath. So, I mean, if you're a short-term trader, trader and you're saying, oh, great, maybe I can make some downside profits or at least, find some new places to look. Sure, I think that's what you're going to see. But again, the sign to me of a healthy market is that the market can withstand the old leaders just sort of losing steam, but new leaders taking their place. And, you imagine a race, a relay race where you pass the baton, the guy who runs first, he goes to the sidelines and sits down and catches his breath. As long as the person who takes the baton from him keeps running, you're in okay shape overall. So I think that's a good analogy, a good thing to think about when you look at this market as an investor.
I love that analogy. Let's go further with that analogy then. Where? What sectors is the baton being passed to, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, again, there was so much negativity, so much worry about things like commercial real estate, and rightfully so, impacting the banks. We had the bank failures back in early 2023, but I just had a great interview with Ed Yardeni at Yardeni Research as part of our podcast, and he basically said, look, there's tentative signs that even an obvious trouble spot for the economy and the markets is starting to right itself. And I agree. If you look at things like the Fed's own data on bank willingness to lend and credit losses and so on, the worst of that appears to have happened a quarter or two ago. If you look at the monthly delinquency rates in some of these commercial real estate related securities, they peaked 4 or 5 months ago. So, it's tentative. It's not like that everything's fixed. It's not like all these empty office buildings are going to, stop going down in value and no banks are going to fail and no buyers of these esoteric real estate securities are going to lose money. But in terms of it being sort of like, are we past the peak loss period or the peak worry period? Yeah, I think we are. And I think it's just going to be sort of a slow grind in the background. So if even that area of obvious stress kind of just, moves to the sidelines, then that's one less thing to worry about. Again, I don't want to sound Pollyannish, but I think sometimes, you have to invest for reality, and sometimes reality is really grim, and sometimes it's the exact opposite. And I'm, pretty bullish about things here.
What about those interest rate sensitive sectors? If we do have rates staying generally higher for longer, could those sectors continue to lag?
Yeah, I mean, look, in this kind of environment, is everybody going to be all bowled up about buying utilities? I mean, no, because they're, it's sort of the be boring sector that I talked about a few years ago when that was working the best and the environment was the best for it. Now you just don't have the interest rates that are really behind you, and you don't have a lot of business, or you don't have a lot of need for extreme safety, which is why sectors like that do well. So yeah, I mean, you're not going to see, in my opinion, much movement or much growth, in a sector like utilities. Or in a sector like consumer staples, that's not going to be where you're going to find your performance. I think, the market started shifting to a more offensive profile from a defensive profile a couple years ago, at the beginning of 2023. And that's, part of the reason I shifted my stance. And I think that's likely going to be the case moving forward. You're going to see, again, the growthier, more offensive, economically sensitive, cyclical type stuff continuing to outperform. So, that's where I think that the best opportunities are moving forward. So that's, that's your transports, it's your industrials, it's your small caps, it's your financials. Again, the stuff that does well when recession fears fade and people start saying, hey, look, the growth's going to pick back up. The Fed didn't put us in a recession. So, let's start buying.
Okay, how about another sector that people continue to harp on? You've mentioned how well the financials have done, but what about the regional banks? Those have continued to struggle, and a lot of the bears want to keep pointing back to regional banks and commercial real estate as the potential black swan event here.
Yeah, I mean, look, is that a part of the market that I think is going to perform fantastically? No, I mean, but at the same time, I mean, what have the regional banks done, for the last few months? They kind of just chopped around. They're sort of sitting there. You're not seeing any more of the broad deterioration that you saw in the wake of the Silicon Valley banks of the world falling apart back in early 2023. So I think it's going to be a sector that just gradually people start bottom fishing in, and gradually, they're going to hopefully differentiate in certain names versus just buy ETFs. I think they're going to be looking for the banks within that group that don't have the, as much CRE exposure as other banks do. But it's kind of funny. I was putting together some notes and sort of a 30,000 foot up look at the market, and trends that I find interesting is even amidst all this talk about regional banking and CRE, if you look at credit spreads overall, the difference in yield that a high yield or junk bond borrower, company or whatever rated company has to pay over and above treasuries, those spreads have actually been coming down for the last few quarters. So they're not, you're not seeing broad credit deterioration, even as you're seeing some of these issues with regional banks and CRE in places. So what does that tell you? That tells you that this isn't a credit crunch. This isn't a credit crisis. This isn't a, bad news in one part is prompting widespread selling in the rest of the economy and the markets. And that's different from what we had in the period leading up to the Great Financial Crisis. I mean, one of the problems there, or one of the reasons it got so bad, is that what happened in mortgages, subprime mortgages, and housing didn't stay bottled up there. It spread throughout the system. And if you look at some of the same indicators now that I looked at then that made me much more worried then, they're not causing that kind of alarm now. So again, it's a different animal. And I think people who just say it was residential back then, it's commercial this time, they're just, that's whatever, 6-inch deep kind of analysis that's not looking way below the seas, which I think you have to do if you're a serious credit analyst.
Let's also talk commodities then, because we look across the board on commodities, some of the major commodities, copper above $4, oil, that's above $80 right now. Natural gas, that's in the dumps, but gold, that's above $2,100 right now. It's been a better commodities environment along with this better environment for a lot of other sectors. What's your outlook for commodities broadly?
Yeah, again, look, I've loved gold for a long time. You and I have talked about that. I liked it 2, 3 years ago. I like it even more now. I mean, you've got the technical breakout on top of the fundamentals that were aligning for quite some time. So still very bullish precious metals. As I mentioned, I mean, copper is another obviously economically sensitive commodities. Whether it's copper, whether it's oil, if people are starting to buy transports, if people are starting to buy materials, if people are starting to buy these commodities, if people are starting to think we did dodge a recession, there's kind of a narrative there, right? The market's telling you, if you're looking at all these different developments, that things are getting better for growth. So in that situation, yeah, there's no, I don't think that that's bad for precious metals. I think it's good for precious metals and base metals and commodities. So, again, I think that all fits into the narrative of, hey, we dodged recession. Hey, growth is probably going to get better here. Money is probably going to start getting easier. It's not going to go back to zero, but hey, it's not going to be, you wake up every day and the Fed's got a cudgel waiting to bludgeon you over the head with when it comes to interest rates, and therefore the dollar takes off. So yeah, so that I think that part of the market is attractive as well.
What are some of gold's catalysts then? If the environment, economic environment is looking better, is gold's main catalyst then just that central banks aren't going to get a whole lot tougher, a whole lot tighter with monetary policy?
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be a big part of it, that the monetary policy environment and the follow-on impact from that, aka a surging dollar that we had in 2022, those aren't going to be issues. So that moves out of the way. You're still looking for people that are looking for kind of an alternative to if money growth reaccelerates, whatever you want to call it, this sort of currency debasement or government debt, things like that. Those are always going to be an issue where people are looking for ways to find a store of value. I think, it's funny because I still see a lot of those debate kind of issues, oh, Bitcoin or gold, which one should I buy? To protect myself from money printing and currency debasement and just government debt and all those other big picture issues. And I say, look, I use my emojis to signify what it was on Twitter. And that was, next to Bitcoin, I put a rabbit, a hare. Next to gold, I put a tortoise. And I said, I still think both win this race, but it's just they're both assets that are going to win. It's just Bitcoin is sort of the turbocharged version of it and gold sort of the slower moving. But hey, you can make money in both and you're going to have smaller drawdowns and less risk and volatility in gold than you are in crypto. So I think that those are all part of the same narrative, and that's why I still remain bullish on precious metals.
All right, let's talk Bitcoin then, because look, Bitcoin continues to be volatile and it was recently over $70,000. Then it sharply pulled back. This is all coming on the back of more positive news just broadly out of the crypto space. What do you think are some of the key drivers for Bitcoin and broadly when it comes to cryptos? Is the outlook just that much better because of ETFs and just more people seeming to get on board?
I think ETFs and mainstream money flowing into that asset class. Yeah, that's a big catalyst. But, you know, I think it wouldn't be, if you just all of a sudden launched a bunch of Bitcoin ETFs, but there wasn't an underlying story that people believed in and that, you know, was had the benefit of being true. You're looking for things, ways to protect your money from, again, sort of government debasement and all those things. You wouldn't see the fund flows that we have. But I think, yeah, you're looking at Bitcoin by opening up the doors to mainstream participation and doing it in the way where, you know, these ETF sponsors are acquiring or sourcing actual Bitcoin to back those ETFs and so on. Yeah, I mean, it's all part of that same bullish trend. Although, again, understand that, or listeners should understand that that's turbocharging the short term because all this money's pouring in. But longer term, I think you're going to see, you know, the initial euphoria wear off a little bit, but you're going to see the gradual fund flows come in as Bitcoin as an asset class is more institutionalized. So, you know, it'll become more stock-like or gold-like over time and a little less turbocharged over time. I think as, you know, it becomes more of a mainstream instrument. So short-term turbocharge effect, long-term gradually supportive in my opinion.
So Mike, outside of just price moves, and I know price moves dictate a lot for any sector, even for any individual stock, what do you use chart-wise or just anecdotally to judge general interest in different sectors when we do have a generally better environment out there?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's fund flows. I mean, that's something I think is easier to map and watch, especially because there's so much tracking of ETFs, and that's where a lot of money has gone into. It's easier to follow that. So I think fund flows, sentiment surveys. I mean, and frankly, being with Money Show and having access to the presentations and the articles and the videos and so on that our contributors do, I kind of like to keep my finger on the pulse of what they're saying because I know who's generally been right. I know who's, you know, seems to be probably most in tune with the market. So I'll pay attention to what he or she has to say a little bit more than you know, some of the others I haven't followed for a while. And I think, you know, what I'm saying pretty much aligns with what most of our experts are. I would say there's quite a bit of enthusiasm for, you know, for things like AI and tech and that sort of niche there, you know, even after the big run. I think there's a lot of belief and understanding and expectation that this is a real technology. These are real companies. These aren't sort of the flybynight.coms that we had back in 99 that ultimately blew up on you. And as much as things are over, you know, over enthusiastic, maybe in the short term, there is a real long-term business use here. And, you know, that's leading to real revenue, real earnings, and so on. So in any event, I think that's part of, you know, that's another part that I don't quite follow as closely, but certainly a lot of our people are talking about, you know, a lot of those people who are talking about it are not just Johnny come lately. They are people that have been talking about it for several quarters, a couple of years now, and have been right as rain.
So outside of AI and tech, which I think there's no denying the growth that has happened in tech over a longer term than AI, but boy, oh boy, has AI just exploded recently. What are some of the main growth sectors that people are talking about at Money Shows that have caught your attention?
Well, I'll tell you, I think there's a lot of speakers, a lot of narrative about, you know, the appreciation for and understanding for big oil, big energy, traditional energy being a big player and a value play here, despite all the hoopla you get in terms of alternatives and EVs and so on. And I think that's been a story a lot of people have been speaking about, even when nobody wanted to think about big oil and was all about EVs. And now what do you see happening? You see EV demands tailing off, the technology, it's costing an arm and a leg to get your EV repaired. The battery tech has maybe been oversold and overhyped. And in reality, it's, you know, we're still going to be sort of in an internal combustion world for quite some time. So I think that that's actually, if you're looking for like a kind of a value type play, I think a lot of people have stuck with energy, traditional energy. And just like we were talking about earlier, what's starting to perk up? What looks like it might be breaking out here? It's traditional energy. It's crude. So I think that's a sector that maybe hasn't run yet. But if you're looking for what might run next, there you go.
Does that mean you're fading some of this new school energy or green energy initiatives over some of the old school energy?
Yeah, I think it's just a question of value, momentum, and frankly, a gradual appreciation that whether it's public policy, whether it's investor enthusiasm, whether it's, you know, embracing of a technology that might have been oversold, and the reality is that most of the world is still going to be very slow moving on this. I think all of that kind of factors into what's going on. It doesn't mean that there's no future for alternative energy. It will obviously be the future. It's just to get from point A to point B is going to take a lot longer, and the company's focused on, you know, point A technology are going to make a lot more money and do very well for a much longer period of time than I think people appreciated.
Okay, well then before I get you out of here, I guess just in summary, this continues to be a strong market, one that could even continue to broaden out. So in a way, now is, I guess, probably a good time for investors to be diversified in a wide range of sectors playing the long side.
Yeah, I mean, look, this is a market where if you're completely overloaded in tech, everything you own is Mag 7 or similar type names. Look into some of these things that are starting to pick up that baton, whether it's energy, whether it's financials, whether it's small caps, industrials, things like that. Look in. It may not be as exciting or sexy as talking about AI names alone, but you know what? That's where I think you're going to see relative performance from, especially as the economic fears ease. You're going to see things like, as you point out, industrial commodities perk up and the companies that are levered to them. I think, gold and gold miners, silver and so on. I mean, these companies have such, are such sort of small market caps relative to the market. And if you start to see momentum there, just even some of the mainstream money moving into them can have a pretty big outsized effect. So I think those are the types of things you want to be looking at for the next leg of this move, as opposed to just, worrying about what's already ran very far.
So one final comment on that point, then you said gold miners, even the other miners and other major companies, or less so the majors, but some of the mid tiers and all that, they continue to lag these underlying stronger commodity moves. Why is that?
I think, again, I think it's just because a lot of the younger fund managers, people who haven't been around for a long time, they're wrapped up in the excitement of the companies levered to the quote unquote new gold, Bitcoin, things like that. So they may not be paying attention. They may not be directing money to some of these, old winners that win in this kind of cycle. But that doesn't, those who have been around the block for cycles before know that as that changes and as the underlying commodity continues to move, people are going to say, shoot, do I really want to miss out on this just because 2 years ago I didn't want to listen to that old guy in the corner talking about gold miners. So I think that's where you're going to see the realization hit some of the money management industry and some of the fund managers out there. And that's why I think that, as long as the underlying is doing what it's doing, and if I'm right about it continuing to do what it's doing and accelerating, then that's going to be ultimately bullish for some of these companies involved.
All right, Mike, great having you on the show. Thank you for sharing your insights and also some of the insights you're garnering from all the recent money shows. It's great having you on the show, and I really appreciate your level-headed approach to these markets. You've been calling these markets right for years now. Everyone, Mike, again, is editor-in-chief at The Money Show. I will post a link to Money Show website so you can all find out about the most recent upcoming conferences. Mike, have a great rest of your weekend.
Great. Thanks for talking, Corey. Have a good one.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin and Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.